So this week's parsha is Parshas Yisro, which begins, if you have a stone chumash, it's on page 394, beginning of chapter 18. The parsha begins as follows: Vayishma Yisro, Chohen Midyon, Chosei Moshe, Eis Kol Asher Asa Elokim Moshe Yisro Amo. Yisro, the minister of Midyon, father-in-law of Moshe, heard everything that God did to Moshe and Israel's people. He hosted Hashem as Yisrael Mitzrayim, and Hashem had taken Israel out of Egypt. So the pasuk continues, just read the first few psukim. Vayikach Yisro chosei Moshe es tzipora eishes Moshe achas sheyucheho. Yisro, the father-in-law of Moshe, took tzipora, the wife of Moshe, after she had been sent away. Ve'ishnei boneh and her two sons, asher shem ho'echad gershom ki yom ha'ger yisi be'eretz nachriya, v'shem ho'echad Eliezer, k'lekiya v'be'ezri v'etzen l'cherev paro. The two sons, one's name was Gershom, and then the final part right now, pasuk hey, read, Yozo Yisro, chosein Moshe, obonu v'ishtal Moshe. Yisro, the father-in-law of Moshe, came to Moshe with his sons and wife, El Hamidbar, Asher Uchon Hashem, Har Elohim, by the mountain of God. So, there's a great debate among the commentaries going back to the Talmudic times, as to the timeline, exactly at which point Yisro made his arrival. If you just follow the chronology the way it's written, it would seem that Yisro came before the giving of the Torah, the giving of the Ten Commandments, which is we have later on in this week's parasha. So the end of last week's parasha in last week's parasha, we had the splitting of the sea, and then some other things, the manna, and then at the end of the parasha, we had the war with Amalek, and then here we have Yisro's arrival, and then right after this, we have the section of them arriving at Har Sinai, and we have the this week's parasha, we have the giving of the Aseret HaDibros, of the Ten Commandments. So it would seem from where it's placed in the Torah that Yisro arrived at this point, somewhere between the war with Amalek and the giving of the Ten Commandments. However, there's a problem. There are a number of problems with that. I'm not going to get into the whole reasoning. One thing is just because we find afterwards, as part of the story with Yisro, it mentions that Moshe was teaching the laws of Hashem to the people. And if this was before the giving of the Ten Commandments, so then there weren't too many laws for him to be teaching and for him to be busy with. So that would seem to be an indication that he came afterwards. And the truth of the matter is, even if we say that Yisro came before, there seems to be something that it looks like there's something wrong with reading the chronology straight. It doesn't seem to work. It doesn't seem to be in chronological order regardless, because the end of last week's parsha, the Jewish people were in a place called Rephidim. That's where the war with Amalek took place. And later in this parsha, we find the Jewish people traveling from Rephidim and going to the Midbar Sinai, going to the wilderness of Sinai and camping in front of Har Sinai. So the camping in front of Har Sinai seemingly didn't happen yet at the beginning of this week's parsha. It seems that we ended off last week's parsha in Rephidim, and they didn't leave Rephidim until later on in this parsha. Whereas Yisro, we do the pasuk that we just read, pasuk hey, said that Yisro came where? He came to where they were camping, Har Elohim, at the mountain of God, at Har Sinai. So it says that Yisro arrived at Har Sinai. But if you read the rest of the chronology, it doesn't seem like they were even there yet at Har Sinai, because the travel to Har Sinai actually happens later in the parasha. So I don't want to get too technical here, but either opinion you're going to follow, it doesn't seem to be in the chronological order. Well, the placement of Yisro is put here, even though it doesn't seem to fit the timeline of the chronology. If we're going to assume that things happened in the order that they're placed, it seems that it happened later. Either it happened after the giving of the Ten Commandments, or at least it happened after they arrived at Har Sinai. And both of those two things are not mentioned in the parasha till later. So then the question that it brings up is, the obvious question is, so if it's not written in chronological order, which is not unique in the Torah, the Gemara tells us there are many examples of things in the Torah that are not necessarily written in chronological order, but there's always a reason. There has to be a reason why the Torah would write it in some other order. There must be some other logic or some other lesson that was supposed to be deriving from the order. So why is it that this particular incident of the arrival of Yisro, why is it placed at this specific spot? That's a very important question, which requires some understanding. So the truth is that I believe that in some sense, Rashi really answers this question. Because Rashi, at the very first Rashi in the parasha, Rashi asks a question, Mashmu Hashem Obo. He says, what exactly did Yisro hear? Says Yisro heard everything that happened, that Hashem did. The first half of the pasuk seems kind of vague. He heard everything that Hashem did to Moshe and Yisrael, his nation. So Rashi says, what specifically was it that moved Yisro to make him come? So Rashi says two things. He brings from earlier sources, from the Gemara, from Mechilta, from the Midrashim, that he says he heard Kriyas Yamsuf about the splitting of the sea, Umelchemes Amalek, and about the war with Amalek. Those two things. Now it's interesting that those two incidents, the Kriyas Yamsuf and Umelchemes Amalek, those incidents are the subject of last week's parasha. Last week's parasha ends with the last thing in the parasha is the war with Amalek. And not long before that in the parasha, we have the splitting of the sea. So it's perhaps if it's not written in chronological order, the reason why it's written in this order is because that was the impetus. Those things that are mentioned right before this, specifically the war with Amalek, which was immediately before this. But before that, we have the splitting of the sea. So these two things were set the stage for Yisro to come. Splitting of the sea, the war with Amalek, and Yisro came. Now, maybe he was delayed. He didn't come. He didn't get there right away, or he arrived after they already received the Torah, or after they were ready at Har Sinai. But the reason why he came was because he heard those things that happened right before this. So, if that's the case, then we have to try to understand that in and of itself. So the splitting of the sea, it's not so difficult to understand why that would be something that would be so overwhelming that such a stupendous event and unique in world history, the splitting of the sea, that would be something that would move Yisrael. But the war with Amalek, what was it about the war with Amalek? That it's okay. I mean, was it so miraculous? We don't find any particular description of some overtly miraculous occurrence. Yes, we have Moshe picking up his hands and davening, and that's true. But somehow it doesn't seem to be in the same league clearly miraculous event as the splitting of the sea. So if that's the case, why was it? What was it about the war with Amalek that moved Yisro to come? That's the question I want to deal with. I think I'm not going to ask as many questions tonight because I want to get to something particular I want to talk about at the end a little bit more. So I think this is the basic question. We have Yisro coming. It's set out of order. It's set specifically or particularly right after the war with Amalek. And the question is, why is the war, and Rashi says the war with Amalek is actually the reason for Yisro to come, but at least that was one of the reasons. So why was the war of Amalek something that made Yisro come? So I'd like to point something out. I may have spoken about this in previous years. I don't remember, but I certainly want to bring out a certain point here tonight. Perhaps it became a little bit clearer to me than ever before. So I want to point something out, which occurred to me some years ago, a peculiar connection seemingly between two very different people or nations. And that's the connection between the unlikely connection that we find between Yisro and Amalek. And one place where we find that connection is right here. Well, like we just said, we have the war with Amalek, and immediately on the heels of the war with Amalek, and according to Rashi's interpretation, because of the war with Amalek, Yisro comes on the scene. Okay, that's number one. But this is not the only place where we find Yisro and Amalek to get together. Another place, an interesting place, is in the words of Bilam. Later on, we know the story that happens where Bilam was hired to curse the Jewish people, and he wasn't successful at it. And at the end of that story, there are a number of prophecies that Bilam has and speaks about. And one of these prophecies is about Amalek. And the one immediately following the one about Amalek is about what he calls the Cainy. Now, who is the Cainy? So the Cainy, we know from other sources, actually is the nation associated with Amalek.
How long you been with so
if you
with this company? He's a good guy. Yeah. I really like him. Yeah,
it's good. Right. Look in your Chumash, you could. It's on page 872. But we have there, Bilam says, Vayaras Amalek. It says, Bilam saw Amalek, and he said, Raise his coin, Amalek. He predicted that Amalek is going to be, eternal destruction. Amalek is the first of them among the nations, and its end will be eternal destruction. And the very next pasuk, it says, he saw the Cainy. Who's the Cainy? The descendants of Yisro. And he declaimed a parable, and he said, Eisan Moshevecha v'sim basel kinecha, strong is your dwelling, and set in a rock is your nest. And I'm not going to go into exactly what Bilam was saying there. It's going to take us too long. But the general idea here is that Bilam didn't talk about much there. He spoke about a number of things. But two things that he spoke about back to back immediately was Amalek and how the wickedness of Amalek and their being doomed to eventual destruction. And immediately following that, a positive prophecy about the strength of Yisro and Yisro's descendants and about their future being a glorious, good future. Now, again, why these two things coming together? Amalek and immediately Yisro. And the third place, which is perhaps the most strange and the most difficult to understand, is... And this is going to be actually in a few weeks. We're going to have the Parsha Zachar, which is the where we actually have the special reading about Amalek before Purim. And over there in the Haftorah, we have of Parsha Zachar, we have the story of King Shaul HaMelech, King Saul, who was commanded to attack and wipe out Amalek. And over there, there's one pasuk that seems to be a minor thing, but it's right there in the Haftorah where Shaul sends a message to the Cainy. The Cainy again being the same nation that's associated with the descendants of Yisro. And he tells the Cainy, get out of the way, because it seems the Cainy was living, they were neighbors of Amalek. They lived right where the Amalek nation lived. So Shaul told the Keni, you better get out of the way because we're about to attack Amalek and I don't want to get you, I don't want you guys to get hurt. But again, and the Keni had nowhere else to live but right next door to Amalek. And isn't that striking? Yisro, see, here's the war of Amalek. He shows up. Bilam predicts the downfall of Amalek, and immediately he predicts the great glorious future of Yisro, of Yisro's descendants. And then we find Yisro and Amalek actually neighbors physically. They were physically neighbors. They weren't only neighbors in the Torah, where we have the story of in the earlier stories of the Torah, but they find them later in the land or near the land of Israel. They were actually living right next to each other. How do we understand this? What's this connection between Amalek, Yisro and Amalek? So I think we can start explaining this as follows. The first word in this week's parasha is the word we've spoken about in the past, a very familiar word, Vayishma. Yisro heard. Yisro was listening and he heard. A number of midrashim over here make a point out of the fact that the Torah emphasizes that Yisro heard about what happened to the Jewish people, and the midrashim seem to be bothered or seem to be calling our attention to the fact that seems to be not at all unique about Yisro. There's one medrash that I heard quoted, I didn't find it now, but that says, is Yisro the only one that heard? Everybody heard. This was big news. Everyone heard that the Jewish people left Egypt and about the splitting of the sea, possibly about the war with Amalek. Everybody heard about these events. Yisro was the only one who heard about these events? No, obviously not. So what's the difference? Why are we talking about Yisro's hearing? So obviously, because Yisro heard in a way that was different than the way everyone else heard. And the Medrash actually I saw makes this comparison, this contrast. We have in last week's Pasha, in the Song of the Sea, in the Oz Yashir, it says clearly actually, Shamu Amim, the nations heard. The nations heard what? They heard about the exodus of Egypt, from Egypt. They heard about all the miracles. Shamu Amim, Yir Gozun, and they trembled. It speaks about how the nations basically trembled. They heard and they trembled. So, and the Medrash says that makes this point, that everybody else heard and they trembled. Yisro heard and he came. That was completely different. Now there's two, how do we understand this? That there's two different ways that you can hear something. Another illustration, the Medrash gives a very interesting kind of a story about, it talks about, actually, I think it's following the opinion that Yitzchok came after the giving of the Torah. And it says that when Hashem came down to Har Sinai to give the Torah later on in our parsha, it says everybody in the world heard, like there was trembling, there was something going on, there was something in the air. Everybody realized there's something going on. And they couldn't quite understand what it was. It was frightening. And it says, what did they do? They all came to the person who they thought was an expert on such matters, and in some sense maybe he was, and that person was Bilam, we just mentioned before. It says they all came to Bilam because Bilam was like some type of a spiritual seer of some sort. And everybody came to Bilam and said, what is going on here? We feel something in the air, something frightening. They said, maybe Hashem, maybe there's going to be another Mabul, there's going to be another flood coming to the world. And Bilam said, no flood. They said, well, maybe not a flood of water, maybe a flood of fire. And Bilam said, no, there's not going to be a flood of water. There's not going to be a flood of fire. Hashem is giving the Torah to the Jewish people. Bilam knew what was going on. So he told them, Hashem is giving the Torah to the Jewish people. So then he quoted, the quote to the pasuk, Hashem owes la'amo yitain. Hashem is giving strength, which is the Torah, which is our strength, to his nation. So what did everybody else say? They said, Hashem yivorech es amo v'shalom. Hashem should bless his nation with peace and they all went home and went back to their TV or whatever they were doing. That was it. They were done. That's the difference between the way everybody else heard and the way Yisro heard. And I think the way we can possibly put this is that, you know, listening, hearing could be a very, very beneficial, a tremendously beneficial thing. I was learning recently the Sefer Shari Tshuva from Rabbeinu Yonah, where he makes this point at length. And he says that one of the most powerful motivations that can actually bring a person to tremendous, tremendous gains in their spiritual life is if they have the ability to really listen to what wise people are saying or what the Torah is saying, really listen to it. Because if a person is a good listener, we know that's great for interpersonal relations. True, of course, I think that's obvious. We all know that. But the same thing is in our relations with Hashem. If a person is a good listener and is able to really listen to what the wise people are saying, what the Torah is saying, so that could give, that can bring a person to really understand and have that what needs to be done to live the best kind of a life, and a person could grow to great heights, and it's all traces back to his ability to listen. And that was Yisro's kind of listening. Yisro, we like Bilam said, Yisro has a glorious future for eternity. Why? It's all because of his first word in that parasha, Vayishma Yisro. Because Yisro knew how to listen. But most of the world at the time, they were not listening. Now, why weren't they listening? So it brings to mind, there's a wonderful book that maybe some of you read. I highly recommend it. It's one of the best books I've read in memory, really. I didn't read so recently. Book called Tales Out of Shul from Rabbi Emanuel Feldman. It's a phenomenal book. And that book, he makes a very, very strong point. And he talks about this at length. But I remember one particular anecdote that he says, that there were people who were members of a shul. He was a rabbi of a shul in Atlanta for many years. And there were people that came to a shul, a couple, and they said, we want to resign from our membership. We're moving. We want to move to a different shul. And so he said, why? He asked them why. He said, well, we're not comfortable here anymore. You say certain things from the pulpit that make us feel bad, that we're not living up to it, or something like that. You make us uncomfortable. And Rabbi Feldman said to them something like, you know, maybe a shul is a place where you're not necessarily have to always feel totally comfortable. Maybe one of the purposes of a shul is that you could hear things that could possibly, you know, jar you a little bit out of your comfort level and be able to go to grow a little bit higher. The people were not able to hear that, and they actually left. And this is what I think, and this is something that we all grapple with on our level. It's easy to look at other people and say that they don't want to listen. We all have things that we're uncomfortable listening to, because if we hear them, they jar us out of our peaceful existence that we're great and everything's great, I'm great. And you know, as long as I hear things that fit with the way I like to look at things and the things that I'm already, the spiritual levels that I'm already comfortable with, that's great. But if I start hearing something that's maybe pushing, it would make me feel that maybe perhaps I should get up and do something to make something better than I was before, that's something that we don't necessarily like hearing. We all have things that we don't like hearing, all of us. And what separates the Yisros from the rest of the world is this point. Everybody else, they heard, as soon as Bilam told that Hashem's giving the Torah to the Jewish people, they said, oh, that's interesting. But Very nice. Okay. You know, if Hashem is destroying the world and there's a mob or whatever, you know, help, I better escape. But here, oh, it's only that Hashem is revealing his to his ambassadors what the entire purpose of the universe is of everyone. That's all it is. They say, oh, that's all it is. I'm going to go back and read the newspaper. Why? Because I don't want to hear what that's all about. Because if I'm going to hear what that's all about, that may make me uncomfortable. And therefore, I'm not going to listen to it. And Yisro was someone who was able to take this information, really listen to it, confront it, not be afraid to be made, to be shaken up a little bit. And because of that, He gained for himself and for his family forever and ever the great strength that of being associated with Hashem's mission on this world has. And that's what made Yisrael different than everyone else. Now, so we spoke about two kinds of listeners, but there's really a third kind of listener. And that third kind of listener, in some sense, is similar to Yisrael, because he's not someone who doesn't hear the uncomfortable things. It's someone who does hear the uncomfortable things. But the question is, what do they do with it? And that listener who I'm talking about is the listener of Amalek. Amalek also heard everything that happened with the Jewish people. And Amalek did not do what the vast majority of the world did, which is to ignore it. Amalek could not ignore it because he heard it and he realized this is something really powerful going on here and I don't like it. And because Amalek didn't like it and they weren't able to get over the fact that they don't like it, they, instead of doing what Yisro did, they did the exact opposite. And that is, we're going to wage war against it. We're going to try to get rid of it. Because this thing that's making me uncomfortable is bothering me. You know, I can't ignore it because this is real. But I need to wipe it out. And that's what Amalek did. And that's where there's a certain connection between Yisro and Amalek. Yisro and Amalek together are different than the whole rest of the world. The whole rest of the world, they hear something uncomfortable, like the Jewish people receiving the Torah, being led out to start representing to the entire world Hashem's goals, Hashem's values in the world. That's different and perhaps makes other people uncomfortable with the way they used to looking at things and doing things. The whole rest of the world, they tune it out. They ignore it. Yisro does not tune it out. Amalek does not tune it out. They have the sensitivity that they hear it and they listen to it. However, they go in two opposite directions. Amalek, he wages war with the Jewish people. Yisro, what did Yisro hear? Perhaps we can say, Yisro heard about the war with Amalek. What was it that gave Yisro the inspiration to actually do what he did? Perhaps you can say that he was inspired in some interesting way by Amalek. Because when he heard that Amalek was trying to destroy the Jewish people, and Yisro had a certain kinship with Amalek, because Amalek's the type of guy that he hears what's really going on. And if Amalek found it necessary to go ahead and attack the Jewish people, it means there's something really going on here. And Yisro listened to this, and he heard it, and he understood, yes, there is something going on, but I'm not going to be a suicide bomber like Amalek. That's not what I'm going to do. I'm going to go ahead and do the opposite and join up with the Jewish people. And so that's why hearing the war with Amalek is what brought Yisro to what he did. Now, in the next few minutes over here, I wanted to talk about something. On this, some of you may have heard, on this past Sunday, there were a number of great great rabbanim, great chachamim in Eretz Yisrael, in Israel, that passed away. One of them was a person who I had the privilege to study in his yeshiva, and he was someone who made a tremendous impression on me when I was young, Rabbi David Soloveitchik, who passed away at the age of 99. And Rabbi David Soloveitchik, it's so interesting because I was talking to my wife the next day, and I said to her, you know, I'm surprised at myself at how affected I was by hearing the news of his passing. And why was I surprised? Because I studied under him. I left his yeshiva almost 35 years ago. Well, I left his yeshiva. I saw him once since, about 25 years ago, for about 20 minutes. I had no contact with him. He didn't really have a telephone. It's not like you could talk to him. It's a different topic to talk about how he lived. I started his yeshiva for a year and a half when I was 20 years old. But my wife said, she says, I'm not surprised. She says to me, do you know how often you talk about him? And I said, oh yeah, really? I do actually. So he's someone almost a day that hasn't gone by in the years since I left the yeshiva that I haven't thought about him, but thought spoken about him. So he's someone who made a tremendous impression on me. But that said, I want to spend the next 5 minutes or so that we have now talking a little bit about the unique approach to Torah that I learned from Reb David Soloveitchik. And it really requires probably a separate class about it, but it ties into what we were just talking about. So that's why I want to mention it. Reb David Soloveitchik taught us, and hopefully we learned it to at least some extent, he taught us how to listen to what the Torah is saying. And I want to illustrate to you, it's very difficult, but I want to try to illustrate to you how he did it, because he did it in a very unique way. I'm going to describe to you the shiur, the Gemara class that Reb David would give, the kind of Gemara class. And I never heard a Gemara class like this before or since. It's a completely unique way of teaching Gemara. At least that's in my experience. He would, and again, I actually have a piece of Gemara here that I can perhaps demonstrate, but I'll do that a different time. Right now, I just want to bring out the point because to connect it to that, to our parsha. He would take out a Gemara, the Gemara that we were learning, and start reading the Gemara. He would read the Gemara, read a line, read it two lines. He would come to a few words that sound somewhat inaccurate. It has at least not precise. It sounds somewhat imprecise. Sometimes, anytime you'll read anything, there'll be something that may sound like, if I was trying to be precise, I'll put it somewhere differently. He would read his words and he would ask, it's not that, it's this, or something like that. You know, he would say like, why does it say that? It's really should say this, right? And he would ask that question. And I want to tell you right now, that the vast majority of people that learn that Gemara, that question may be a fleeting thought in their mind, but immediately a person would say, well, it doesn't really mean that. It means this. Well, right? That's what most people would do, because it's a subtle distinction that you can easily, you know, say it's not important, something like that. You know, it's not an important distinction. What's the difference if it's this or it's that? It doesn't really make such a difference anyway. And there it said a big way when it really meant that. Most people would not articulate that, but that's what would go through our minds. Maybe you'll understand maybe you get a feeling for what I'm saying, I hope. But the kind of thing that it is. But he wouldn't get away with that. He would ask the question, and he would ask it twice, and he would ask it three times. And then it would continue. Most 90% of the time he asked questions like that, he did not answer them. You sometimes hear people ask me those kind of questions when they have an answer. But he would ask those questions, and I don't remember the percentage. I would say the majority of the class, Gemara class that he gave was this kind of thing that I just described, which is, I think, phenomenally unique. And what was he trying to do with this? He was trying to bang into our minds that when we learn Torah, we have to listen. We have to listen to what the Torah is saying. And that doesn't mean that we're going to understand it. It's not going to mean that we're going to have an appreciation for what the Torah is trying to tell us in every single nuance. But if there's a nuance there, even if we don't appreciate what that nuance is coming to tell us, but we shouldn't sweep it under the carpet and say, listen, I don't understand this, so it's probably not there, you know, because I think that's the way psychologically we work. We don't want to be confronted with something that we don't understand, that we don't really think we're going to understand, or it's going to take us work to understand it, and I'm probably going to work and I won't understand it anyway, so I might as well say it's insignificant. No. When we're learning Torah, if a person approaches Torah that way, they could be missing so, so much. We can gain so much more from the Torah if we listen, if we keep our ears open, but in order to really listen, we have to be willing to confront discomfort, because there's something uncomfortable about being left with 20 questions that I can't answer on the Gemara. And he was, I don't know what the word is, but merciless, I would say, on this. You know, if there's a question here, even if it seems like a minor question, but if there's a question, you have to ask it. And if you don't think you're going to know the answer, or you suspect that there is no good answer, first of all, you have to have enough, and he certainly did. You have to have the strength of the understanding and the humility to be able to say that we don't understand everything of the Torah. The Torah is from Hashem, and just because I don't see the significance of something, but there must be some significance if it's part of the Torah, and we have to have the humility to understand it. But if a person has that humility, then they'll be able to face the discomfort of not knowing. And there's more, the more open you are, the more things you'll see that you don't really know. And that's fine, because that's the way it has to be. The infinite Torah has, how much can we grasp of it already? But thank God we can grasp a lot. We can grasp so much to make our lives, from our perspective, infinitely meaningful. But at the same time, there's so much that we're not going to understand. And that sometimes doesn't feel so good. But if we're able to get past that and get over that and be able to really listen to what the Torah is saying, we're going to be able to learn so, so much. We're going to find treasures there in the Torah that the vast, vast majority of people would miss, because they're not willing to confront the discomfort of actually listening to something which may make a person walk away feeling inadequate or something like that. And that's I think in a nutshell what I think I wanted to share today. So going back to Yisro, it's basically the message of Yisro, the word of Hashem in that Hashem acting through the Exodus from Egypt, or the giving of the Torah, or the miracles, or the word of Hashem in the Torah itself. Sometimes confronting the word of Hashem could be uncomfortable. Sometimes, most of the time, it's not uncomfortable. It's beautiful, and it's the most exhilarating thing for us in our lives. I'm not trying to be negative here, but there's obviously nothing so beautiful and joyous and and yes, resonating with the human neshama. There's nothing like the Torah, like the word of Hashem, that eventually, and not only eventually, every little bit that we get in and we incorporate and we do understand gives us the greatest thrill and gives us the greatest joy. Of course, all of that is there. But at the same time, there's a certain element we can't afford only to take the Torah and as to the extent that we're comfortable with it. We have to be able to listen to the Torah even when and beyond, pushing us beyond that comfort level. And that's what Yisro was able to do. And we have to try to find it within ourselves, not to be like the rest of the world that's going to push it under the rug. Certainly we have to be on guard, chas v'shalom, not to be like a Amalek, and when it's uncomfortable to reject it. So we have to be careful with how we deal with uncomfortable things. But at the same time, the more we're able to in a healthy way push a little bit beyond our comfort level, we would be learning from Yisro. And I think that's one of the things that I learned from my Rabbi Soloveitchik as well. And that's what I wanted to share tonight. And thank you all very much.